Hey, my name is Tim. I'm the lead pastor here. It's so good to be with you this morning. Thanks for choosing to spend part of Easter weekend, part of Resurrection Sunday here with us at Mosaic. This is one of my favorite days of the year as a follower of Jesus. This is one of my favorite days of the year as a pastor, as a husband, as a dad, and just all that this day means. And so just thanks for being here. Thanks for celebrating with us. And if you're here on a regular basis, you're a part of this church family. This is obviously, you know, it's a high point in our year that we get to celebrate. If you're here as a kind of as a family member or friend, and you came willingly and excitedly, I hope you're having a great time. If you got coerced here in any way, I'm just really glad that you're here. And I hope whatever payoff you get, if it's food or otherwise, that it's well worth it. But it's just good to have you here and to be able to be together. And I hope you're able to worship Jesus with us as we sing, as we open up God's word together, as we see some people get baptized. If you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus, or maybe you were at one point and it's not a part of your life to walk with Jesus at this point, I hope that this experience here this morning is feels safe for you and is encouraging and also points you to Jesus and makes him more real in some new way. This day for us is the day that, and this isn't for a follower of Jesus, this isn't a something that we don't do on a regular basis, but it's something that shapes our whole lives, that the reality that Jesus Christ was born, lived some 2,000 years ago, was executed on a cross, was buried in a tomb very carefully, very systematically, very scientifically, and then did the unexpected, that he rose again to life, that he was alive again and walked this earth for some several weeks and then ascended into heaven and is alive today, means everything to us. And so the songs that we sing and the way that we seek to live our lives in relationship with Jesus and to live our lives in this world to make a difference, to bring his good into this world, this day points to that event and it means everything to us. This day also means a lot of other things as well. I don't know if you have participated in or helped facilitate or won an Easter egg hunt recently or ever. I got together with some friends that from Mosaic that live in the neighborhood that we live in. We live in East Portland, and we got together and stuffed Easter eggs a couple weeks ago as a part of our neighborhood community. I think it was 800 stuffed 800 eggs, like the plastic kind, which are not made to close, and like 800 of those things. And then yesterday we went to a brand new park in our neighborhood and conducted an Easter egg hunt. Easter, as we all know, is tied to the fertility god of way back when, and bunnies, and they reproduce really fast. And kids, we're so glad you're in here. Ask your parents about that over lunch today. But Easter is this kind of comes from this idea of a fertility god, and eggs obviously represent that really well as well. And so we did an Easter egg hunt, and it was the day before Easter, and all the Easter colors, and so that fit. We were all about eggs. We were looking for eggs. So we had the Easter part and the egg part. We didn't really have the hunt part. Hunt to me requires a hunter. And all that our Easter egg hunt required was not being blind. So we were in the park, and it was just in an open field, in the soccer field. And so we laid them out, and we put stripes along of tape of under 3 years old, I think, was here. And then this next section was here, and it was great. We set it up. It looked awesome. It was just eggs all over a flat field. So again, all you had to do was be able to see, and there wasn't really any hunting. It was more of an Easter egg pickup, and we lined them up on one side and said, go, and I looked at my watch, and before 3 minutes hit, all the eggs were not hunted, but picked up, and it was done, and it was a blast. It was really, really fun. So I feel like I missed a hunt yesterday. And I didn't fall in any of the age brackets. I didn't get to get any of the prizes or the plastic eggs and anything like that. So I want to tell you about a hunt that I went on a lot of years ago. And it's kind of, I want to share this hunt with you in the spirit of April Fool's Day. Today is April Fool's Day, which I, as a follower of Jesus, find just fascinating that we're celebrating the resurrection, the key miracle in the life of Jesus, and it's April Fool's Day in our world. It's beyond just our nation. Other nations celebrate this day in a whole lot of different ways. And you may or may not know this, but we don't really know where April Fool's Day came from. April Fool's Day, it's either something to do with the changing of the seasons from winter to spring, and so to celebrate it, we do silly jokes and pranks on each other, or it comes from a changing of a calendar, and roughly the 1582. And so I don't know if you've pranked anybody today. And if your prank is tricking them into coming to church, good on you. But the changing of the calendar, and what happened was when the calendar changed, it was Pope Gregory and then a number. Pope Gregory number, I forget, he changed the calendar from the Julian calendar to the, wait for it, Gregorian calendar. So if you're ever going to change a calendar, name it after yourself. But he changes the calendar, and some people didn't get the message in the known world at that time. And so the people that changed from April 1st to January 1st as the beginning of the new year with the change of the calendar, they started making fun of the people that either didn't know about it or knew about it and just didn't like change. And so they stuck with April 1. So they started playing jokes on them and sending them on fool's errand, sending them to look for things that don't really exist. Thus, my hunt. When I was in about fourth grade, on summer camp, we were sitting around the fire one night, and the counselors were with us, and it was a bunch of kids and a bunch of counselors, and one of the counselors ran up to the campfire and went, hey, I just heard something in the bushes. Will you help me come find this animal? And he described it. It's this kind of animal that's in these parts, and he described it as kind of like a squirrel, but without, you know, he said the tail was different than a squirrel and the ears were different than a squirrel. And it had a very specific kind of sound that it made to call to one another. And then I think he said it was white. And he says, we got to go look for these. And so, of course, we're like, we'd love to get these. And so we ran over to these areas of bushes and just circled it. And they had their flashlights on and we're looking for it. Have any of you ever been snipe hunting? Okay. Snipe hunting. So I'm going to ruin this for you if you've never been. So you'll have to make new friends and take them snipe hunting. But we were surrounding the circle of bushes, and we were looking into it. And I can remember distinctly. I can tend to be somewhat competitive. And so I was going to catch the first snipe. And so the flashlights were going in, and we could hear it moving, and it was ran. And I was convinced. I'm a pretty fast guy, or at least I was. And I cornered it in one section, and I started to get into the bushes. And I was into the bushes and convinced that I got really close one time. And I pulled back out, and I told the guys, okay, I got really close. We can get this thing. And there's all these kids and these counselors, and again, flashlights going in. I got a little tired, and so I took a break, and I stepped back out, and I was catching my breath because I was going to catch the first snipe. And I looked over, and then all of a sudden, I saw a counselor off to the side, and he threw a stone in. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and then he did this. He went. And I would like to describe to you kind of physiologically what happened in me at that moment. The ground started to kind of go like this. I got like right in here. I don't know what this is. Maybe if you're a doctor, you can tell me. But right in here started to burn a little bit. My stomach kind of dropped out. I was just confused. Wait, did you just, maybe that was a snipe egg that you threw in there and it was going to hatch and we were going to catch. All of a sudden I realized I wasn't about to catch a snipe, and later found out, if you didn't know this, that snipes don't really exist. There is no woodland creature that's somewhat like a squirrel. I felt fooled. I felt duped. I was confused. I began to doubt what was real. And I've never again trusted a counselor. So that was my experience with snipe hunting. I want to read a few words from the book of Luke in the Bible. And there are some women in these verses that experience that exact same kind of feeling of being duped, of being confused, of doubting what is real. And it happens to them when they show up at the grave of their very good friend, their beloved friend, Jesus Christ, who they've just watched crucified less than 3 days earlier. On Friday night, they watched him crucified. They watched him buried that afternoon, Friday afternoon, evening. And they go through Saturday, confused and sad and mourning. But they have a very specific way of mourning. And they were in that process. And on Sunday morning, they get up really early and they go to the grave. And this is what we find in Luke chapter 24, towards the end of this book of the Bible. Luke 24, in the first few verses, say this. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. It's Mary and another Mary and Joanna and then a few other women that we don't know their names, but they went as a group, crying, huddled together, hugging one another, walking into this graveyard area where this tomb was, that Jesus had been taken off and wrapped up in linen and placed in this tomb. But because of the rush of that, and because of the Romans needing to seal it and confirm that he was 100% for certain, this guy was dead, the way that they did that very carefully, very systematically, they didn't have time to prepare the body in the way that Jewish mourners' family would do for a person who has died. And so they went to the tomb with these spices to prepare the body and preparing to ask the Roman guards to roll away this giant stone and to go in and to prepare the body that had already been wrapped in linens. And they showed up and had already been moved away for them, which they were glad for because they probably could not have done it by themselves. And they went into the tomb and they went in, and then their confusion began because he wasn't there. But the linens that had wrapped him, his body, were there on the ground in an odd way that didn't quite make sense. And they step back outside the tomb. And it says that they're wondering. And wonder for us means a lot of different things, doesn't it? Wonder has this kind of wide breadth of meaning of what it means to wonder. But for them, and in this time, and in this specific verse right here, and this wasn't originally written in English. It was when this story took place and when this book was written, we hadn't even invented English yet. And it was written in a different language. And the specific word used for wonder at that point actually has a very clear meaning. And it doesn't mean to be awestruck or to be excited in any way. Wonder right here has this very specific meaning that means to doubt. And it means to be at a loss. And more specifically, it means to have lost your way, to be without a way. And so these women who know how to grieve and they know how to do it, they've watched their mothers and grandmothers do it, and it's part of their culture. They have a very specific way of grieving, and they can't fulfill it because the body's not there, and they're so confused, and their stomachs have dropped out, and the land begins to move a little bit for them because they're so confused and they don't understand. They've lost their way. They don't know where they're going. We have this experience, or some of us do, and it doesn't sound quite as serious, but it's the same kind of reaction and experience. When we lose our phones, it's kind of like what Mary and Joanna and their friends were experiencing. We lose our phones, and for the first, you know, kind of 60 to 90 seconds, we're not particularly worried, right? Because there's a few places where it could have been, and we could have set it somewhere, and we'll find it. But when 90 seconds passes, the world becomes a very, very different place. We don't know what to do. Our source of everything we've been blocked off from the rest of the world. It's hard to talk to people without our phone on our person. We want to say, okay, if I can just buzz my phone, but I need my phone to do that. If I could just look up, find my phone, but I need my phone to do that. If I could just call a friend to call my phone, that would be, but I need my phone to do that. And so all of a sudden we move into minute 3, 4, 5, and we kind of just give up. And then we just stop walking around and we just stop and stand there and realize that this may be the end of our days. There's no way. I'm out of resources to find my phone. Without my phone, I can't find it. This thing on my wrist is really great, but you know that I need it. I need to be within range, and I'm clearly not. So we just kind of tap out and wait for somebody to come and rescue us. And that's why you should have friends. So at a deeper level, there's other experiences that we know that are far more serious than that. That when we get news that not only did we never want, but we never want anybody we know or have ever seen to ever get the kind of news that comes in an instant, it comes out of nowhere, and it hits us like a ton of bricks from the side that we didn't see coming, and it's disorienting, and we realize that from this moment on, our life is going to be different. That we've gotten a diagnosis that is life-altering. That we've lost a loved one that went way too soon and we didn't see coming. When a trusted friend or a spouse gives us news that completely blindsides us, and we taste for the first time what betrayal is really like. That it affects us not just on an emotional level, but a physiological level, that it just pounds us and we realize this is different. This is changing. I don't have a way forward. I don't know where to take a first step forward. I need help. When the women were feeling that, two angels showed up, which would be great. I would love that when those moments happen in my life. To have two guys show up in gleaming white clothes and they bow down and before him, and then these guys ask them a question. And the question is what reorients their entire life, and it sends them in a completely and utterly new direction. It says this in the next verse. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, here's the question. Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen. Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is. They were looking for somebody very specific. They knew what they were looking for. They were looking for the body of Jesus. They were looking for dead Jesus. And they went to the address where he was buried, and they went inside and they looked for the place that he was set, and he wasn't there. And what these two men say in their question is, do you realize that you're looking for something that doesn't exist? You're on a hunt this morning to put spices on dead Jesus, and dead Jesus doesn't actually exist. And all of a sudden, they're realizing dead Jesus doesn't exist, and they're disoriented, and they're confused, and their wonder is centered on doubt, and they have no way forward. They don't know what the next step is. And the question before them and the question before us is, why are you looking for the living among the dead? Let me change the question a little bit for me and you this morning. Are you looking for a life that only Jesus offers in all of the places that Jesus says it isn't available? Why are you looking for the living among the dead? Why do you look at a place that doesn't have what you long for and what you want and what you desire and what you need and what you were created for and what you were designed for? We are so good at looking among the dead for this life and this living that we were designed for. And we know what it's like, and we know it's exhausting, and we know it doesn't ever stop. And we look for it in adoration from others and affirmation. We look for it in sex and intimacy and pleasure and material things and money and promotion and fun and hobbies and excess. And we look for it in all these different places that Jesus talks about over and over and over again. And he says, it's not there. You can keep looking, but it's not there. You were designed for something more. You were made for something more. You were made for a relationship with the God of the universe that isn't possible without the work that Jesus does. And so the question before the women then and the question before us today is, why do you look for the living among the dead? Why do you look for the life that only Jesus offers in all of the places that he says it's not available? And all of a sudden the women realize, and the next verses actually say that they begin to recount the words that Jesus spoke when Jesus told them weeks and months earlier, hey, I'm going to die and then I'm going to rise again. And they just refused to believe it. They said, that's outside our frame of reference. We're not going to buy that. We don't want to lose you. And then they remember Jesus said he was going to be executed. And then Jesus said he was going to rise again, that the grave wouldn't hold him. And so then they turn around, they go to their closest friends. They say, we got to share this news with our friends. And here's what happens next. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11, which is the 12 disciples minus Judas. The 11, and to all of the others, all their friends, all their close community. They were all hiding out in a house, in an apartment somewhere, confused in mourning, not knowing what was going to happen next, not knowing what that next step forward was. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But get this, a bunch of women walk in and tell a bunch of men this. But they did not believe the women, which was a mistake, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Not my words, that's in the Bible. Because their words to them seemed like nonsense. And that translates in the original language as crazy talk. So the men hear the women saying this news, this story. The men hear the women saying this story. And literally their impression of him is you have a fever and you're in hysterics and you're just hallucinating and saying stuff. They didn't believe them, except Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Peter believed him. He got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away. So he did the exact same thing that the women did. He walked in the tomb, he saw the linen, and he went away, and it says this, wondering to himself what had happened. Wondering to himself. Hang with me on this. That word wondering in our language looks exactly the same as what the women did. But it's a very different word. And unless you have like a Greek lexicon in your pocket, you're just going to have to trust me on this. Wondering for us has this wide meaning. What the women experienced was this doubt and this confusion and couldn't move forward. What Peter experiences, it's a different word entirely, and it means something completely different. What Peter experienced was amazement. Peter marveled at what he had just seen because he had heard from his friends, Mary and Joanna and the others. He had heard from his friends that they were different and they were telling him a story. And he goes in and he sees for himself. He didn't buy it on his own. He had to go see for himself, which many of us have to do, right? And if you haven't had to do it yet in your life, you're probably going to do it at one point in your life. And if you haven't done it yet in your life, I invite you to do it at some point in your life. It's to see for yourself. It's to look into it for yourself, because on face value, it's like, this is an easy thing. We don't have video evidence of Jesus rising from the dead, and he's not walking around right now so he can tell me. And, we're not quite sure how we got this book and the historical records here and the historical records. To see for yourself and to actually look into it. And if there's a record of anybody being dead throughout the course of history, you're going to want them to be killed to be sure that they're dead by the Romans. The Romans are really, really good at it. They spent a lot of time and investment, a lot of R&D in how to kill people and then make sure that they're dead. That's what they did. The Romans were really good at that, killed Jesus. And then went through all this process to make sure he was dead. And then if that's not enough, there's all this record of these people who gave their lives. And sometimes crazy people give their lives for things that aren't really true. But the number of them that have given their lives for Jesus and followed him, and the records that we have all point to that Jesus literally, historically, factually rose from the dead. And it's the reason that we're here today celebrating and singing and worshiping. It's the reason that we're here today and that people are giving their lives continually today, because they're encountering not a story alone, not a myth, not some written document, but they're experiencing the risen Savior who's alive today and present with us, who the grave could not hold, who lives and walks and talks and speaks to us and heals and convicts and changes lives. That Jesus Christ is alive in our world today. And Peter had the amazement that goes along with that truth, that he marveled at it. It's a different word. The women doubted and then came to believe. And Peter had this wonder and amazement that Jesus is alive. In the next coming weeks, we're actually going to look at the questions and the doubts and the uncertainties that we have, and to see for ourselves and to look into the things in our world today where we wonder, does Jesus have anything to say to this? If Jesus is really alive, how does he speak to the things in our world that aren't going right, where the injustices and the pain and the suffering? And what does science mean when it comes to our faith? And all of these questions where we go, we have to see for ourselves, we have to ask the questions and look closely. And we're going to spend the next number of weeks as we gather on Sunday looking at these. We're calling it Where Jesus Goes, because we have to go there at some point in our life. We can't keep our faith hidden and secret and off to the side and live the rest of our lives. That Jesus wants to be in all of it together. And there are things that we can find out and learn and answers that we can find, so we can come to a place of wonder and amazement of who Jesus is and what he's doing today. Peter believed. The invitation to each of us is to believe that Jesus did not stay in the grave, but that he rose from the dead. That it's a sign of God's love for us. It's the ultimate sign of the love for us, that his death on the cross paid a price for us that creates a way for us to be in relationship with God. And if that is not something that you believe, is that not a story and a fact and a truth that you believe today, you're invited to believe that today.